Hello everyone, welcome to today's episode of Torquem Talk. We have a special episode today where we have Shannon Keith, who was on before, and her new, breaking news today, her new CEO, Lisa Flynn, coming in for Sudara. Lisa, Shannon, and I sit down and go over many things on how they came to this decision, big things on women in the workplace, some stuff that kind of helped put me in my place when it comes to what men should be doing in the workplace, is some humbling stuff for a male leader like myself when I thought I had that figured out. Turns out I didn't, and I think a lot of other male business owners won't too. So some great moments of vulnerability of me learning from myself, from the masters of Lisa and Shannon, and how great of business-minded people they are, not just women, but just straight up people. So Shannon Keith, you guys, as you may or may not know, I mean, she went on this trip to India in 2005, inspired her to basically battle sex slavery, to create Sudara, taking women out of sex slavery and having them become seamstresses and getting a new life. Since founding Sudara, she has received multiple accolades and rewards for her groundbreaking conscientious approach to business ventures. She has been honored as a social impact winner at Oregon's largest angel investing conference. She won Female Entrepreneur of the Year in 2017, spoke at TEDx, and was a top 25 CEO World Venture finalist, in addition to being featured in the Good Trade Conscious magazine, Real Simple, Forbes, and more. Lisa has degrees in both marketing and psychology and has spent nearly two decades as an entrepreneur, both bootstrapped and venture capital backed. Lisa's no strength to high growth businesses. She's a nationally sought-after speaker and thought leader for her insight into effective business strategy and systems and how humans navigate them for better or worse. Lisa's career highlights include speaking at TEDx Women, being named Entrepreneur of the Year as well, and featured in Business Week for a unique franchise concept. She's also recognized in Ad Age magazine for her public service work and has won a variety of advertising awards, including the American Advertising Federation's prestigious Silver Medal Award. And she is the new awesome CEO of Sudara, and I can't wait for you guys to be able to see this wonderfully funny, fun, inspiring, and vulnerable conversation between Shannon Keith, Lisa, and myself. Welcome, Shannon. I see you here, and you brought a friend, but
first,
a word from our sponsor. Just a second.
Wait for it.
Okay.
There it is. Oh, product placement.
Okay. Habit Hot Sauce is your local, organic, non-GMO, gluten-free, and coming to a mailbox near you. If you want to support free-range peppers, support Habit Hot Sauce. Okay. All right. So, guys.
Awesome. That was awesome.
Let's just get this.
I want to support free-range peppers.
All right. So. Back to my original question, Shannon. It's great to have you back on the show.
Good to be here.
We
got
a ton of great comments, engagement, people talking about the first time you're on, and I see that you've brought a friend who I've also met before, but I'll let you introduce who's also with us.
I did. Yes. So, yes, thank you for having me back. It was great, and we have some exciting news happening at Sudara. And this week, as you may or may not be aware of, is Women in Entrepreneurship Week. So I thought, what a better way to break the news right here on your podcast than to update you all, whoever's out there listening, on just fantastic things and growth opportunities happening at Sudara. So my friend, Lisa Flynn, who we've been friends with for quite a few years now, probably over 5 or 6 years, we met back when she was moderating a Muse panel. Is that 2005?
No, I think it was like 2014.
Oh, 14.
I think it was 14.
Gosh, I'm all
13.
Over the map.
Yeah.
Okay, but quite a few years. And just thought, wow, here's a really smart, sharp woman. We were both busy, had kind of kept in touch, but, you know, we're living our own lives and she had her own entrepreneurial endeavors and so did I. Anyway, as fate would have it, earlier in this year, really the first week of January in 2019, we reconnected. I kind of told her where I was at with Sudara, what I was thinking about, solicited some of her help. And lo and behold, I'm announcing today that I will be appointing Lisa, the new CEO of Sudara.
Wow.
And so really growing just the vision, and we've had this beautiful partnership. I will continue to stay on the leadership team as the founder and chairwoman of the board, which we'll be building out. But I'm really excited because I feel like Well, I know. I don't just feel like Lisa has the chops, the passion, and the smarts to kind of really help with this next level of growth that we really need. And so it'll allow me to do things that I'm passionate about and really just to get to see her grow and flourish and for our cause.
So this is really big.
It's really huge.
This is really big.
We're breaking the news today. Yeah. Nobody knows about this yet.
This is really big for multiple reasons, which will, I have so many questions, but like the first is kudos because, well, for those of you who don't know, Shannon and I, we were in the same Opportunity Knox group, which is a local CEO type mentor leadership peer group. And Shannon and I gave each other a lot of like tips over the years, and I watched you grow to the point where you were like, and to graduate into the next level of Opportunity Knox. And so to go from growing and what that can do to a human's ego is a lot. But what you're doing is the opposite of that. You're saying step aside, ego. We've gotten to a place where I am looking to give this to somebody that could take it somewhere else. And I'm going to be doing something that I know I'm best at is what I'm picking up from what you just said.
Yes,
and that's incredibly hard to do.
Well, I don't know that it's hard if you come about it in a conscious way, in an intentional way that really has the mission at the focus. Mm-hmm. So I think where it gets hard is if my ego is at the focus, of course, that would be like devastating, right? Because now you're feeling like, oh no, I have all these failures and why couldn't I? And I should be able to, you know, all of those tapes. But that's not the place that I'm at. The place that I've always been, particularly with Sudara, on my best days, is it really is all about the mission. Mm-hmm. And whatever serves the mission best in a way that's collaborative, all of those things, that's what we want to do. So I would love Lisa to chime in on sort of what it feels like from her side, because that really has been my heart and intention. And our core value is collaboration. So women working together, mm-hmm. there's like so much power and synergy that we can do that can be unlocked. So absolutely. I'm super excited to be partners with her.
Me too. I'm definitely the lucky one for sure. And I agree with all that sentiment. And Shannon, I think, has a unique characteristic in that she really doesn't let her ego get in the way. And I think, like she said, that's really conducive to, you know, Sudara is not about the pants, as we say, right? Mm-hmm. It really is about the mission of empowering women and creating pathways to freedom. So when you're working for a bigger mission in that way, in a lot of ways, it does, I think, put more pressure on the entrepreneur. But in other ways, it really gives you permission to say, what do we need to do that's best for? We compare it a lot to the child, right? Like it really does feel like Shannon's been the mom of this amazing company and with these amazing people and, you know, all over the world. And now it's like, as kids grow up, they change and they go through different phases. And sometimes you need help in different areas. Mm-hmm. And it just, I think, was awesome that she was able to say, I know, you know, where I'm at and where I want to go. And I know that I need help. And even in our initial conversations, it wasn't even prescriptive. It was really, I had been an advisor for the company a couple of years ago. And so I came back in just to say, hey, you know, what's going on? Where are we at? What can we do? Mm-hmm. And this whole, you know, we kind of started co-creating from there in terms of, because immediately we were both on the same team. Well, we were already on the same team, you know, because I'd been a fan for a while, of what can we do to really advance this mission in a much bigger way and to level up, right?
Right. How did you choose Lisa?
Well, it wasn't a quick decision. Yeah, I really do feel like it's fate. Mm-hmm. Because so much of that I think is not about coincidence, right? And things do not happen by accident. And through lots of prayer and what we like to say also is manifestation.
Because we're badass manifestors, bud.
I am.
It's true.
Absolutely. We'll totally put it out there. Like, this is what I want. This is what I need, you know? Yeah. And then just seeing how, mm-hmm. and praying through it and seeing how it comes to you. Yeah. So really, it was when we connected in January, and she really came to me at a time where I was like, look, I don't know. I might be on the verge of burnout. I'm not sure. Like, will you as a friend just get together with me? And we had this amazing like 3-hour lunch at Wild Rose. And then from there,
have you
she
gone
just
through a burnout?
Oh yeah. So that was a big part of it. So I was just so in front of Jen, I'm like, I'm not gonna maybe say this, but no. The rest of that was she's like, I think you might just be back. So I took like a serious burnout lap. So after several venture-backed companies, you know, I had some in tech, I franchised one. Like I had it was a big, you know, 10 years for me. With some other personal stuff going on that, you know, because life still happens when you're growing businesses and building businesses.
Turns out.
And it turns out, yeah, it doesn't stop. And I had just literally my family, we sold everything and took a lap around the country in an RV. So I explored my burnout through several states, and wherever I went, there I was.
So did that help at all?
You know what? It really did, because it just got rid of all the clutter. Right. So starting with just like, you know, I was like, oh, super into minimalism all of a sudden, because it was like, because there's just too much. There's just too much.
That's how I feel about my inbox.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it really, so it was kind of magic in the way that, and when we reconnected, that I happened to be like totally available and, you know, just back in Bend. And we knew that we were coming back to Bend.
Recharged.
Yeah. And recharged and like ready to go.
And had some clarity. So when we met, and again, this was just as a friend, it had nothing to do with the business.
I just wanted to help her.
She was just helping me. So then it was like, okay. And then after our 3-hour lunch, it was like, okay, let's have a work session. I just want to have a work session with you to really assess like where you're at. And I really told her, you know, we're going
through
a pivot.
I'm curious on this. What constitutes a work session?
Not just like, you like, know, wine and over lunch, but like a whiteboard.
Okay. Several hours. Like, I think we were 6 or 7 hours.
In a room.
And like a hypothetical, like a really, if you like, you're like, what are you going to do if you take over? And you're like, I'm ready. And then you're like, well,
at this point, it was not at all, even in the conversation, Elisa taking over. She was really like, I'm going to be here for my friend, Shannon Keith.
So as a consultant.
And Shannon Keith is as a friend. Really, okay.
With experience consultant in business
friend.
And growing companies.
Yeah.
And
okay. Well, as a friend, I asked her, like, this is where I think I'm at. I don't know. I feel like I'm on the verge of burnout. I don't want to go there. Here's the company. We've gone through some hard stages. I think we're at a pivot. You know, what do you think? Kind of thing. So it was like, okay, that's a lot. We're not just going to get over here at this lunch. Let's plan this work session. It's mm-hmm. really like a 1-day retreat. So that's what we did. And even from that, it wasn't like, oh, so it totally makes sense for Lisa Flynn to take over. It's really been an evolution over the past 10 months, over mm-hmm. 2019, to say like, okay, let's just take the next step. What would this look like? Okay, now you've been a friend and you volunteered for a month. That's awesome. What would it look like to pay you and to bring you on as an official consultant? Because mm-hmm. she was already consulting and had some other gigs. So it wasn't a full-time deal at first. And then just that step was like, wow, this is great. I love working with Lisa. We work well together. The team really likes her too. As it turns out, she really likes them and is passionate about our mission. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take the next step, right? So it really has been a very organic but intentional process.
So team likes you? I would hope so.
I mean, so
that's what they tell me.
How do you think they would define you? Or how do you think other, not just, still, it might be too early, but how do people that work for you define you?
Ooh, that's a great question. But I think, so I'm a fixer. I'm a problem solver. And I really want to be a conscious leader in terms of developing the whole person, not just driving a business model. Mm-hmm. So I do love a good business model. I like to create them. I like to iterate on them. I like to build the systems, that create, you know, that take the clutter away really. So it kind of gets back to the whole, we're going to come full circle on that, to create order out of chaos mm-hmm. and leave, you know, a guidebook in the wake is something that I just love to do. So, you know, I found that love when I franchised one of my businesses, and was like, ooh, you know, so my day job, I started out in marketing and then I kind of got the entrepreneurial bug and mm-hmm. started a marketing strategy firm back when, emerging media is what we called it. Like, oh, you can, you know, send commercial messages to people's cell phones, you know, like that was like really big. And I really realized I found that I loved operating in uncharted territory. Uh-huh. And then I like making those.
Oh, me too. I'm on TikTok every day right now, trying to figure it out to offer it to clients.
Right. Yeah.
I'm like, there is something, and there is something to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to go down a TikTok hole right now, but yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that what the team appreciates that what I've brought is some more structure and is that strategy and a plan to say, mm-hmm. You know, pick a path and now we want to grow. So Shannon did an amazing job, Shannon and team, with getting Sudara to where it's at. I mean, she has, you know, beat unbelievable odds to take the company, you know, on the trajectory that it was on. And I see that a lot. I've done a lot of consulting in startups around turnaround time, around what I call the hairpin turn. Mm-hmm. So when things, pretty much what happens is everything that you were doing to get you to that point, if you continue to operate that way, will either keep you stuck there or worse, will kill you, right? As a business.
Mm, yeah.
Not, well, sometimes you, which is probably
no, actually, yeah,
it
yeah.
really
yeah.
has become
heart
an
attacks
epidemic.
For
yeah.
young entrepreneurs.
Who was it? The CEO of Oracle just died, 62.
Yeah.
On the, they didn't say why, but I think everybody just kind of knows like from the stress.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and there was...
If you let it get to you.
It will. And yeah. suicide amongst entrepreneurs had became sort of an epidemic as well.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's a great article. Mm-hmm. It's about the... I think it's called The Psychological Effects of Entrepreneurship. It's going to be right around there. I'll get it for you.
So now that I have two businesses, I'm twice as likely to kill myself.
Right?
Yeah. All right, so enough of this.
But yeah, right. Maybe you take a sip of this and relax for it.
It's good for your heart. Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah. It's funny. The reason exactly. I'm going down this burnout train is because I actually just went through that last week. It was last week. And so I was working like 16, 18 hour days, basically Mazama Media. And then once I got home, I was just making peppers, trying to hit all these deadlines that I made in my own mind.
Yeah.
And I just realized over the weekend, I was like, what are you doing? Like, you're stressing out. You're coming to a burnout on everything over timelines you created.
Right. Self-imposed deadlines. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And I'd have my girlfriend be like, well, why does it need to go in November? I came up with all these excuses.
Right.
That I had, but then I was like, it's a really good question. I don't have a really good answer, but I'm gonna keep talking until she's done with the conversation.
right. Well, yeah. it's what I say is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. Right. So can you operate in the red for a while? Yes. And as an entrepreneur, are there times that necessitate that you kind of need to if you're gonna, play this game? Yes. But you can't create a culture of that. You can't.
Absolutely.
It's not sustainable.
No.
Right. And so I think that part of that is recognizing, that comes back to where Shannon was with the company and recognizing that it was grow or die pretty much, and mm-hmm. recognize that where she already was at with as much as was on her plate, how are we going to make this sustainable?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is obvious, is you can't do it alone, right? You need mm-hmm. help.
And I think the beautiful part that Lisa and I both aspire to, so there's never been any conflict here at all, which is super nice, is we both approach life out of strengths-based leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done that in our top five strengths, if you do strength finders. And the cool part is we share two of the five top strengths, responsibility and activator. So it's like, we're going to get shit done and we're going to do things. We're not just going to talk about it, which is nice that we're on the same page. But the other three are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so her top is strategic, which is really good for this next phase of Sudara, where we need to be going, right? And then what are the other?
So responsibility, activator,
strategic. Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot. Sorry. But anyway, they're really well-rounded to mine, because my other three are belief, communication, and woo, which make me... Woo is woo. Winning others over.
Oh,
so that's what they
you
call.
Are a good wooer.
So thank you.
Right? It worked for me.
Yeah.
So where that allows her to be super strategic and me to say, okay, how through that belief, right? Because at the end of the day, I'm really an activist.
Yeah.
And I believe that we can be living in a better world than we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's things that we can actually do as human beings collectively to actually make that happen, right? It's not this like determinated, fatalistic approach and we're just on autopilot. I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
So the cool part is we can use Sudara as a platform, not just for the cause that we're really passionate about, helping women and children out of sex trafficking in India all mm-hmm. day long. I want to be doing that for sure. But the other side of that is we have this model now that really can be exported to like really any business, any vertical. It isn't just about pajamas. It isn't just about product services. You can sort of take the philosophy of leadership
mm-hmm.
And of business that we're trying to do and put that into tech, put that into food and beverage,
absolutely.
Put that into real estate, put that into whatever you want. And so I'm really passionate about having some time and space to be able to sort of blow the roof off of that as well.
And one of the things that
so many things to do.
Yeah. One of the things that we did that I think is different than most is when we, along this organic process where we're like, we one day said, hey, maybe I would want to be the CEO here. Maybe I would want to take this role. And let's talk about what that might look like, because we had determined, and I approached with how do we keep Shannon doing what Shannon does best and serving this mission, right? And so I really approached from that standpoint and then one day was like, oh yeah, this might be me. And so what we did that I think might be different than most is we're like, let's go see a counselor, right? So if we're going to be partners And if we're going to be really in this kind of work marriage, I call it, we have work wives work and wives. home husbands.
Right, yeah.
How are we going to, navigate this?
How'd you find a counselor for that?
Well, so she,
she's amazing.
Because we're badass manifestors.
And we manifested it.
So she showed up.
All right, fair enough.
And is this amazing leadership coach that works with, leaders in across all different types of companies.
But had spent some space in conscious capitalism and in this social good space, which was really important for me. Because although I know Lisa's heart and whatnot, she's been her background is just kind of hardcore business and those VC backed companies and whatever. And I was like, ooh, I'm really approaching at it differently. And so I want to make sure I know we're in alignment in most other areas, but this, I don't want it to be to sucker punch me and, oh, I didn't know you wanted to go all this direction. Mm-hmm. So really looking for someone who understood business and what we were trying to do that could really help just mediate and facilitate conversation. Mm-hmm. And then it was sort of coming to this conclusion, yes, of course, I would love Lisa to be the CEO. She brings so much to this and it'll be a good challenge for her, but also she can bring good skills. And then what does that mean for kind of my role and what does that look like? And so having our mediator counselor friend was really beautiful and such a great, I think, process for all of us.
Totally.
Totally.
And what I love the most is she, I think this is a great endorsement. She ended up joining the team. So she's our head of sales now. So she's seen the worst of it and she wanted to be a part of it. So we're thinking we might be on this.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
As we build our leadership team.
So what was, hey, Mitch, can you grab a couple of coasters for their wine?
Yeah.
Let's go back really quick to the two Thank characteristics you. You two shared. What were they again?
Okay. So mine are, it's strategic. I can't remember what the second one is.
I know, because
right
the top
and then responsibility, activator, and significance.
Oh, significance
and
achiever.
That was my second.
Achiever.
Yes.
Achiever,
yeah.
Significance and achiever.
Strategic, achiever, responsibility, activator, significance
and
for me.
Yeah. The two you shared was activator.
And responsibility.
And responsibility. And responsibility. So activator really quick.
Is taking action.
Yeah.
You're person. We don't talk about it. Right. We actually get action. Stuff done.
Yeah. So I did do research on you, Lisa. And I did watch your podcast. So this, just before I say this, why did Bud? That was really out of left field. It's not. But in your podcast, you brought up this great point about if you call, not your podcast, your TED Talk.
Oh, yeah.
In your TED Talk, when you were saying when a male is called a activist, he is awesome, risk-taking, he's doing, he's taking on the world and a great leader and all that stuff. Women business leader is a bitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
you get that a lot. I've definitely had that a lot.
And you know, I never thought like that, but I heard you say when I was researching before you came on show, I was just like, oh my God, that is very unfortunately true.
Mm-hmm.
I do something and that's great. And it actually happens within this company because I'm 50-50 partners with Sarah. And she'll do something bold and something, and I can hear through the pregame people. I don't know if I've ever heard the word bitch, but
that's a sentiment of wow, that was harsh.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus that was awesome leadership.
And I know that if I do something almost equivalent, but another way,
you're powerful and strong, and making a good leader and making good decisions.
But the other weird thing is that it's mostly women that work here that are saying these things too.
Yes, because that's
so
the
why
culture.
Why are women hating on women?
Because it's this culture effect, right? So the
women
externalities.
It is.
It is. Yeah. And so we're changing that. That's the whole point that we want to model this,
I can see
right?
That.
Is
it's
that
great.
We're just saying, hey, and it really, not to get all woo-woo on you.
She's a woo-woo.
But here I go. It comes from kind of a spirit of scarcity, right? Mm-hmm. There's not enough success in the world to go around. Therefore, I have to grab and take and da-da-da. And we just don't buy into that.
Right.
I call bullshit on that. So basically, it's no, there's enough success in the world for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't a scarce resource. And we can grow the pie and we can make it bigger. But that whole hangover, if you will, from sort of the white man's game, women have bought into that. And that's mm-hmm. been their culture. And white women voted in Trump. I mean, there's so many reasons that we're like, why is this happening?
And specifically in business. So I talk in my TED Talk a little bit about the one and done mentality. And mm-hmm. and basically when one woman gets to the C-suite or gets to leadership or gets a seat at the table, then that's it. Then the quota is fulfilled. Check the box. It's tokenism. And it wasn't even, like I've been called the token skirt. Like it's not even,
I haven't heard that term before.
It's not even like uncommon to be the only woman in the room. Now, the interesting thing, and so therefore it was that scarcity mentality, and it was only one's going to get it. And also if you did get there, you're playing by the men's rules. It's not an inclusive. It's not an,
it's their game.
Do you have an idea, not to put you on the spot, but do you have an idea of what those rules, what you define them as?
Well, you know what? I brought some show and tell, actually. Right,
please. I was going to ask you what kind of books you recommend to people. Yes. So
one of my new favorites is Wolf Pack by Abby Wambach. And she, I don't know if you know who she is. She was on the, she's a 2-time Olympic gold medalist. She was on the women's national team. She's the leading goal scorer in the sport, men or women, internationally.
Nice.
And you probably maybe not have even
known that,
heard of her or known that. Yeah. And so she wrote this book that's awesome. It's a quick, easy read. And she basically talks about the rules of the game and how we need to change them. So some of those rules, and I thought she like hit the nail on the head. I mean, a lot of what I was talking about in my TED Talk, which was interesting to note that my TED Talk was pre-Me Too. So a lot of what I was talking about, I felt like I had to be pretty careful in approaching. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be too abrasive. I didn't want to come off as a feminazi, which was, you know, a term we didn't have shirts that said wild feminist then. Like we weren't collectively out and talking about feminism being a good thing. So I had to approach kind of from a, let's just walk in with the facts, right? And sadly, even though we are talking a lot more about those statistics, they really haven't changed much. So when I read this book, I'm like, yes, sister, she's like nailing it. So, you know, some of the rules were, you know, stay on the path or stay in your lane. And the new rule that she suggests is create your own path. Mm-hmm. Right. So we don't have, but we've always sort of been, we've always bought and been sold this prescription of, if you want to be in business, this is what you need to do. And this is the way you need to act. And these are sort of the rules of that game. So this is a great one for women. So the old rule was be grateful for what you have. So I did. I remember, you know, feeling just, and, you know, we talk a lot about now about having gratitude and, you know, using that to, as a path to abundance and all those things. I remember being grateful that I raised venture capital, being thrilled that I was, you know, that I did have a seat at the table. And I didn't realize, you know, the second part, which she's saying, so the new rule is be grateful for what you have and demand what you deserve. Right. Mm-hmm. So there's subtle differences that when you're not in the minority group, when you're not in the group that's excluded, when you don't look, you know, I look around and there's no other women in the room. So there's a very clear message on, you know, the way that you need to act and the rules you need to follow if you want to keep your seat at the table. Right.
You're right.
And now, you know, we don't. So the next one, I won't read all of them. The next one, you know, the old rule was wait for permission to lead. And the new rule is lead now from wherever you are. Right. So I think that the game has changed considerably and significantly.
And we no longer need to ask permission because it's like, hey, if the guys are all playing football, guess what?
Cool.
I don't like football.
We're going to go play this again.
I'm going to play a different game with my own rules. And I think there's going to be a lot of other ladies and maybe even some really cool guys who want to join me. Mm-hmm. Right. So we're no longer waiting sort of to ask permission of the establishment.
Right.
Like we don't really need to do that because this is kind of the sociologist in me. Where has that gotten us?
Right.
Over the last like 60 years of business? Is that working? And if it's not, why do we keep doing it? That's what's so crazy.
You know who actually is one of the great feminists ever? It's actually Plato. And a lot of people don't know that, but it was asinine to be said back then, back in Greek world Athens. Not that it's not now, but where a woman's role at that time, 2,300 years ago, was to be, you know, in the kitchen doing whatever that the male was saying for them to do, period. And Plato said, well, it turns out that their minds can be educated just as well as a male's. And in what case should they not be doing everything that a male is, including positions of power, even being a philosopher king or anything like that. And that was seen as just straight up blasphemy.
Scandalous. Yeah.
That was a long time ago. But it's funny how it's unfortunate it didn't catch on. It took a bit longer. And even now, there's a lot that needs to be done. But gosh, when was it that women's suffrage ended when it came
1920.
To 1920? Yeah. So
100 years ago.
Yeah,
not that long ago.
Yeah. Yeah. 99 years ago.
And it wasn't for all women. I think that was for white women.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? So there's a thing sometimes when we think about underrepresented groups, you know, that we don't take it the full way. We're like, oh, women were able to vote. It's like, not all women were able to vote.
And black men were able to vote before women were able to vote.
And when you talk about this country and its history, I have a lot of clients out in Philly, and so I'm a big history buff. And every time I go to Philly, I go into American history one way or another. And this time, the last time, was the American Revolutionary War Museum, and I was reading a Declaration of Independence, and they just made a great point of just showing and just diving into, like, it just says that we believe that all men are created equal. But we're having slaves. And the guys that wrote that had slaves. I was like, what in the world? And it's just their perception. But they thought that what they were writing was true.
Yeah.
It's right. Assumed that
and
that meant white males.
History is always written by the winner.
Yeah, right.
Like the history books that we read is written by the winner. So it's only one perspective.
That's why we're not speaking German.
So when we talk about history books, it's like, well, that was a very limited point of view. You know, I'm sure indigenous peoples would have a much different volume
avatar type of view
history than what happened. Right. So I think there's, you know, contextualizing everything, including business, is really important. I love philosophizing more than anyone, but really it's okay, let's just look at the lay of the land. Has it worked? Has it not? How can it work better? And then the activist part in both of us, that action oriented, is like, we could be doing things differently. So why don't we? We could be doing things better. Let's try it. And
you've been doing that fantastically so far.
I mean, so far, so good. We're stumbling along the way. But the beautiful part is, you know, this is not some secret sauce that we want to keep to ourselves. This is what we're completely putting out there. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing and exciting to see that it's really drawing like-minded women. So when we talked about how did we find that woman to be the counselor who's now our head of sales, it was like we put it out there and said, this is who we are. This is what we're trying to do. So after it was like, you know, months after we went through this counseling, she was like, hey, raising my hand, I'm really interested in what you're doing. Like, that's amazing. Right. And so when we put it out there and these just badass women, I mean, there's some cool male allies, too, but really powerful, smart, connected, kind women raising their hand and coming to the table and like, we want to help you do this. Why? Not just because we should love Shannon and Lisa. Sure, you guys are great. But we really believe in what you're trying to do. And we think that business can be done better and it can be a force for good. And we want to be part of the solution.
And I think that business is even sort of a fast forward button around politics a little bit. Right. So how do we really change things? We take the money away. How do we make something else work better? We give it more money. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that's just so we don't need to elect anyone to decide what we're going to do there. No. We just need to collectively work. We just need to work together.
That's how the organic movement was grown. It wasn't a law. It was just people were like, I want organic food.
Yeah.
Now it's like a norm.
Yeah.
And I think people forget that the main way that you actually vote is with your wallet.
Absolutely. With our time and our money.
Exactly. Which is why I think we talked about this on the last show. It was so important for Sudara to be a business and not just a nonprofit because we want to leverage the voting power with people's dollars and be that example of, I think we talked a little about shifting our M&Ms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whether you have a lot of M&Ms or a little, you get to choose where to spend them.
Exactly. So what I'm curious on is, how do you guys think the that feminism kind of turned into like an F word over the years?
For good?
No,
not that F word.
No, not for good. But like, there's this cultural notion of just like, oh, she's a feminist.
Yeah, I think
I hear that
campaign.
From women saying that.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was a smear campaign.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, you know, how do we keep only one
women
seat.
Down.
Yeah. How do we keep women down? How do we keep power where it's at without having to deal with all this change? Because because we do like to do things differently. We do think differently. We, you know, we innovate. But and even with the, we all know psychologically, like if you have a team that where everyone's the same, a team polarizes in that way, and you're and you get groupthink, and it's not your best work. You're not going to come up with your best work product. So yeah. So how did that change? And I really think it's, you know, like what Shannon was saying about the history books too, right? If white men can keep the power and keep making the rules, that works out well for them.
But going into like how women end up helping society, which is tremendously, and how America just seems to not care about it. There's a bunch of different stats that get towards that. One of the main, I mean, there's so many, but we were having a conversation before the podcast and it just blew my mind. No. well, we talked about it, but I saw in your TED Talk, correct me on the stat, but it was like women-led businesses do like percent 25%. Ridiculous. Yeah, 25% higher growth in gross returns. Sales.
Yeah.
Oh, so, even better. ROI on leadership. Why isn't that? Why was I learning that from watching your TED Talk?
That's a really good, great question. And it's the same. And the stats are the same. So and what I talked about just prior to that is that women only get 2% of venture funding that's doled out. So again, I've been lucky. I've been one of the token women. I've gotten some of that a couple of times for a couple of different companies. So yeah, why? That's a really great question. I don't know why. So the stats are there.
I think it goes back to establishment is where my gut goes. It's like, well, guys don't want to lose power. So who cares about that? And let's just keep it going the way it is. But, if that will
be unconscious bias, you know, not all, I mean, I'm married to a fantastic white guy. And so is So we
love our husbands. Pretty great white guys too.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I also don't like to hate on myself for being a white man.
We're not going there.
I'm anti-hating on myself.
Yeah. That's good for yourself. I don't think everyone's, you know, a misogynist, but I think there is, some are, and it's very conscious and deliberate, but I don't think that that's the majority. I think the majority is unconscious bias that, when something isn't broke, don't fix it, and pattern recognition. And so I recognize this thing and it looks like that. And so I think so much of it is blind spots and unconscious bias that lead us here, but we're here to raise our hand and say, but let me tell you, it is, you might not see it and you have a blind spot, but I'm holding a mirror to it and saying it isn't okay. And we're not doing ourselves any favors by excluding half of the genius in the world, you know, from bringing their ideas and solutions to the table. Mm-hmm. So we can be better together. And together doesn't mean all women.
No.
Together means a really good, equitable representation of both.
What do you guys end up thinking about, like, this movement that's been happening to white men that has been just, you suck, has been kind of what's been happening while you guys are married to two great ones. I haven't met your husband. I have met yours, and he's a fantastic
he's awesome.
Human
he's
being.
He's really great.
The empathy that he has for what's happening to women.
He's really, dedicated
he'll
his
be
life.
On the podcast
Work.
Tomorrow. Mm. He's a fantastic, fantastic human. I pride our company on operating off of integrity, and the women thing wasn't because of me trying to be a feminist. It was because they were just the best at what they do at what we need them to do. But I have to, unfortunately, I'm not doing things that I used to do in the past. And those are things that lift up people's self-esteem. So it'd be things like, Shannon, those are awesome. Those are beautiful earrings. When'd you get those? I like them. And I'm not hitting on you. I'm just telling you that
earrings.
Yeah, I'm just, and I am afraid of doing that nowadays because of the movement that's happened. And I'm not hitting on those people. I would like to just lift up my team member's self-esteem. Like, oh, thank you. Because I know it'd make their day. Because when people compliment shoes I'm wearing or stuff I'm doing, I'm like, oh, thank you. And I like it. I wag my little tail and I go on in my day.
I think channeling it to maybe things that aren't as just superficial that women have had. So when you can find ways to compliment them on their ideas, on different things, I think that it removes that tokenism that has, even though that wasn't in your heart, culturally, you know, that's what men would find to compliment women on their looks and their appearance, which is an objectification of women.
And if you think about it from merit, if you think about it, when you see little kids, right? Mm-hmm. What do you say to a little girl? Oh, look, you're darling. I love your dress. You're so cute. What do you say to a little boy? Oh, look how strong you are. Look how tough you are. Look how smart you are.
Yeah, I guess so. Right? That's amazing. As I'm being aware of what I'm saying, what you guys are saying, you're completely right. So
it starts young. It's in society. We don't mean, and this is part of the unconscious bias where we're all a part of it. And I'm catching myself now.
Yeah, I thought what I was saying was good. This is a great lesson.
Right?
Yeah.
And I catch myself now with more like, you know, just talk that is, you know, I'll say like, oh, you know, and I'm trying to be funny and saying like, you know, they ran away screaming with their arms flailing, crying like a little girl or crying like a little boy. You know, so it's part of, it just really has culture. Been part of the culture and part of our talk. And having, you know, being the mother of two sons, so I don't have any daughters, I'm very aware of that and very aware of their self-esteem and their ego And being able to have the conversation to say, you know, they're white boys that live in Bend, Oregon. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they were born to privilege, as was I, as were all of us in this room, really. Sure. So it's, you know, the conversations that we have is, you know, you shouldn't be expected to apologize for what you have. You shouldn't be, there was still certainly work and effort and intellect and planning that went into the successes that you mm-hmm. have, but recognition that you did have a head start. That you did have help that other people maybe don't have, and just, you know, being aware of that, realizing that there's power in that mm-hmm. and using that power to lift up others who don't have it is really, I think, the message that we need to be talking to our sons and daughters about.
And each other, right?
That are each other.
Because this idea of compassion and empathy definitely needs to be in the workplace too. It isn't just this soft skill that needs to be at home and with families and in our educational system. It definitely needs to be there, but it needs to translate to every part of our society for any sort of shift to happen in our like collective consciousness, right? As a country, as a humanity, for us to start making progress. Because until that happens, we continue to treat the bottom of the pyramid, which, you know, we live in a world that has like a little over 7 billion people. Half of those are bottom of the pyramid who we are just ignoring, abusing, oppressing. Why are we allowing ourselves to do that? Because our collective conscious hasn't woken up and said, that's not okay to do. And it's not okay for businesses to continue to oppress and rape and pillage the land and people and supply chains so that they get rich and give their money to shareholders and they get richer and richer. And we just crap all over these people. Like, that's what we've been doing in business. And at some point we have to go, enough is enough. That's not okay to do.
So going back really quick, I think this would be really powerful to other men listening or watching this, as it's already been powerful to me. And this is something that I do now, which is with my female team, I just don't be like, oh, well, if I can't compliment your earrings, then I'm not complimenting you at all. I'm constantly saying you kicked ass on this. It was an amazing idea. This and that. But I was under the notion until what you guys said to me right now that is a nice thing to be doing and that I should do that to make people feel better, but be better of me basically consistently complimenting their characteristics. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Their value add mm-hmm. and the job that you're paying them to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, that's something I have been doing. I'm looking outside of that. I'm looking at more of like a casual compliments.
There's other ways you can support without complimenting too.
Yeah.
Right. So being understanding, mm-hmm. being aware, you know, understanding the struggles that maybe a single mom or even a not single mom have to go through, right? So my husband's a musician. So I've, you know, been in business and had several businesses. And so we have the opposite family dynamic, mm-hmm. right? Where I've been the primary breadwinner and he's, you know, primarily taking care of the kids. Yet still in 2019, if someone wants the kid to go on a play date, they text me. If a kid gets sick at school, they call me, even though he's listed as the primary, even though.
Really?
So, mm-hmm. So being understanding and kind of, you know, and there's plenty of education out there available to, you know, what do working women go through? What do, whether they're single or not, you know, and understanding the sacrifices that are being made to do the work that they're doing is another way to be supportive.
What happened when you had kids?
Actually, it's funny. That's what kicked off my entrepreneurial journey. So
when you had kids,
mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. I knew that I wouldn't be able to be the kind of mom that I wanted to be if I was working for someone else. I know this sounds crazy. Just having freedom of my own schedule was a pretty big deal for me. And also recognizing that my husband really wanted to pursue music. And that's not a 9-to-5 type situation. Mm-hmm. So if I controlled the financial destiny of the family, that felt like a safer move to me, which I'm also on record saying my risk tolerance is probably pathological. I should probably be medicated. So this is not for everyone. But really for me, I just knew that I wasn't going to be able to do both. And so I had to blend the work life thing if it was going to work for our family, which is a unique situation, but not that unique. I mean, there's a lot of people that are in, you know, similar situations there. The other thing that you can do for women in, you know, that are on your team or in business elsewhere, a phenomenon that happens too is like men are promoted based on their potential. Women are promoted based on their past experience. Men have mentors and actual sponsors that will help them get to the next level, or that will, you know, really make a difference in their sure. career path. And women sort of don't, like, really? That just hasn't been part of the deal. And now
Shannon,
it is
who've
now.
Who've been your mentors? Because I know you haven't been going through life without them.
Yeah. And mentoring is different than sponsorship. So sponsorship right. is really taking an active role, saying, I recognize the skill set you have, mm-hmm. and we want to help develop that to get you to that next level. So an example of what we've done is with our new VP of marketing. So she hasn't been at a VP level before, although she's got amazing experience with mm-hmm. Microsoft and all this like global, you know, crazy, crazy experience, but hasn't been. For women, they really need someone in the higher level to say, I'll take you. Because that's what happens with men, and it doesn't happen with women. So even just being able to do that and saying, I'm going to help you understand, you know, a little more strategy, or, you know, if you don't understand, depending on, and everybody has their strengths and weaknesses, but identifying the skill set, identifying the needs that those people have to get to the next level, and then actively helping them with that. And, you know, and we've seen this also in friends that have started a new company where they've reached out to other women mm-hmm. sponsors and basically said, like, I need help. I need a client. I need to get off the ground or whatever. And for no other, I mean, not no other reason. They had a great product. They had a great service. You know, they absolutely deserve to be there, but they needed someone just to say, I pick you just because I want to be intentional about choosing you and doing business with you and helping you progress and succeed. God. And that is a phenomenon that just hasn't happened for women in business. And it's starting to now. So the more that we can talk about that, and that's, you know, again, we're not going to solve segregation with more segregation. So right. it's not just for women to sponsor other women. It's for men to sponsor women too. And, right. and to learn those roles. I have, and as does Shannon, we have, you know, 60-year-old white men that are mentors for mm-hmm. us and that are on our council as we're developing a board. So we definitely recognize that we're not saying we want only women here, because then we're doing the same thing that you know we're not happy with now, and we'll experience the same results of the groupthink and polarization and all of those things. So it really is important for all of us to be putting our intention, our time, our money. It's also investing. So that's another reason that even despite the, you know, 25% return, the higher return, we're still outside the boys club. So still most of the money goes to sponsor those companies that men are running.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's starting to turn that tide. One thing I wanted to address really quick was something I've noticed when asking about what happened when you had kids is the double standard that women go through. Mm-hmm. Do you want to take it from here, or do you want me to take it?
Well, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
My thoughts on double standard is, if you have a kid and then you don't work, then, wow, she's just a stay-at-home mom. If you have a kid and you decide to work, how could she do that to her kid working and not being with him? That's a pretty ridiculous double standard.
It's kind of a lose-lose situation.
It's a very lose-lose situation.
Yeah, paint moms in too.
Yeah. And
I just think it needs to be addressed a little more.
And there's some other countries doing it better than we are. I think Denmark.
Oh, like
maybe
any
some
country
of the,
than us?
Yeah, where they have like a year off, right?
Yeah.
Like a year off with their kids for bonding. So they're seen as a help to society, that we're helping, you know, grow human beings for one. Let's just put it there. Yeah. Like that's a really noble, amazing job to be done. And then when they re-enter the workforce, they're not penalized for having children. So that is a difference too.
And even just the, you know, the way that the 40-hour work week,
mm-hmm.
right, is not designed for women in business, or it's not really designed for parents in business. It was designed, you know, over 100 years ago by Henry Ford mm-hmm. with the assembly line, right? Because that's what made sense when everybody lived in houses right around the plant and there was, you know, the man was working and they walked in and had their lunch. So when women bounce out of the workforce, it's usually to take care of a family member, either a child or a parent, and then they're penalized when they come back. So they lose their job. We just need to be doing so much better in this country because it keeps perpetuating.
Have you guys looked
it's
at
like a vicious cycle.
It is.
The stats on countries and how much better they do when they have maternity leave that is significantly longer than our bullshit over here, because we're the fuck are we? 0 weeks paid, 12 weeks where they're guaranteed to have their job back. If they take longer than that.
Yeah, not their,
not their job back.
Oh, I didn't know that. A, cool. and then the other, so it's even worse than I thought. It already was awful. And the other, what was the other really fun one on there? 12 weeks, not paid. If it's longer, you have to claim disability, which that is just such a ridiculous thing for a human psyche to write down. I am disabled because I had a child.
Right.
I'm sorry, if it wasn't for you, there wouldn't be humans anymore and be an earth full of non-humans, but you're disabled. Appreciate it. And that's what our country does here. When you have Denmark, like you were saying, a year, most European countries are on 6 months paid, by the way. We had our first here, Devin, and I felt awful crunching the numbers and figuring out what we can afford as a startup of no investors. And I was like, I called her and I was like, Devin, we can afford to pay you 8 weeks and you can take off 16. But if you need more, just let me know. And it can be as long as you want. And she started crying. And I was just like, and I also said to her, please don't be mad at me, because as we grow and the next woman gets pregnant here, or man, I'm hoping this will look small.
Yeah, it could be more. Yeah. Right. Which is the intentionality. Like, good on you for saying, hey, we're setting our intention. I wish it could be more, but I'm committing to
Yeah. And not only committing, but doing it.
Yeah. She cried out of happiness, by the way. Not
We got that.
Yeah.
But that what is it? So another set, as I was researching into this, it was, this isn't exact, but it's definitely over the 50% mark. I think it's even in the 60s. So we'll call it 56. Percent of businesses just do that, the 12 week unpaid in this country, to not even get your job back, but a job back. You're the janitor now.
Right.
I was the CFO. Yeah. But so, now you're the janitor.
The bigger thing. And I love Lisa brought another show and tell, which is one of our favorites too, because we're talking about, you know, a sort of snapshot that's horrible, but with this much larger conversation around inequity. And so I think it's not just a buzzword that we want to just kind of go, oh yeah, I've heard that, blah, blah, blah. But it's, you know, one of the UN's global sustainability goal, development goals. And then Melinda Gates talks about it in her new book, and it really is one of the
main points.
Yeah. Yes,
amazing.
But I think there's a really cool quote that Lisa shared with me that I was like, oh, we need to share that today on the podcast, because it really encapsulates this, what we're talking about, and the fact that we can do better, and there are examples of why we need to do better, and that it's actually attainable. So we're not saying we need to do better and the only way we can do better is going to Mars. That's not the solution.
That's not the solution. And we could spend more time talking about why the problems are happening or happening. And I think there's lots of reasons, and it comes back into, you know, it comes back to the one woman at the, you know, with the seat at the table. When companies are deciding, when companies in the United States are deciding what is the standard maternity leave going to be, guess how many women are helping inform that decision?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, maybe one or two, like total across.
Sorry, nobody saw me put zero, or nobody heard that. Yeah, I mean, you could have saw it here, but what a great host I am.
Yeah. So
I signaled to zero.
Right.
Anyway, it's going to be low.
And I think that there, you know, there are different things that we can do to help with that. But I think that the understanding, and Melinda Gates in, you know, wrote this book, The Moment of Lift, How Empowering Women Changes the World. And this is based on 20 years of their research from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's not just like her opinion, right? And she says, women's rights and society's health and wealth rise together. And she says, understanding this link between women's empowerment and the wealth and health of societies is crucial for humanity. As much as any insight we've gained in our work over the past 20 years, this was huge. This was our huge missed idea. She says, my huge missed idea. If you want to lift up humanity, empower women. It's the most comprehensive, pervasive, high leverage investment you can make in human beings.
So
we need to do that. And why? Because when you help women, women help the communities around them. That's what we
and
do.
And that's why societies lift, and societies are inclusive of business
and
government and
policy
and all of those things that we're talking about.
So how do we do it? How do we take, like, as entrepreneurs that... Most people who listen to this podcast are in Ben. So as Ben, and they're mostly on a managerial, leader, entrepreneurial, which would mean they're mostly men.
Right.
So how do we help?
I think we have to first acknowledge it and not sort of be in denial. Like, I'm a good guy. That doesn't apply to me. Pass.
You mean what I was just doing?
Kind of. Yeah.
but look at the turnaround in just right. a short period of time.
Right. It only took an hour.
So that's what we need to do.
So, mm-hmm. right? And not be just like dismissive about it. Like, I'm good. That doesn't apply to me. Blah, blah, blah. Because that's what herein lies the unconscious bias. It's like, okay, everyone is saying they're good and everything's right. great, but we look around and the policies that are made around all of these things are not good. So what's the disconnect there? So rather than, I'm not advocating for beating yourself up, you know, but I am advocating for take a good look in the mirror and then ask other women around you. Right? Because we inherently cannot see our own blind spots. That's why they're called blind spots. Mm-hmm. So we have to ask people around us, hey, what is it that I do that could come across as sexist? This and that. My heart isn't to do that. But if I'm doing these actions unknowingly, like I'm asking you right now with permission, please tell me. Mm-hmm. Maybe people in your workplace aren't going to feel that way if they're your employees or whatever. But really, a girlfriend, a neighbor, a family member, they're going to tell you like, yeah, you do come across as X, Y, and Z. Or how can that's I, if I want to help someone,
it's like now do people want to have these conversations?
People don't want to have them, but they need to be had.
Or how do you, or the question doesn't have to be personal. How do you think men can be more supportive of women to help with this epidemic that we're experiencing right now? Mm-hmm. You know, so those questions and
depersonalize it. Yeah, it makes it safer maybe.
And, you know, here's the thing that has struck me. So what do we know is not polite dinner conversation at the table? We don't talk about politics or religion, right?
Or money.
Right. Because anything that could be uncomfortable, anything that we might have differing views on or whatever, we were just taught like it's just not polite to talk about it.
That's fine. And my dad definitely taught me that.
And what has that created?
I don't know.
Society where people can't PC communicate and talk about anything and we can't solve the problems if we don't admit that they're there. Mm-hmm. So those conversations can feel awkward and weird, but you get used to it. You know, when you get into that different space and recognize like the growth that can happen from there. Just like when you're learning, you know, learning TikTok, learning something new. Yeah. So it's awkward and weird when you first start it, but then you're like, oh, I kind of get this. I can do this. And then the other thing that I think we really need to be focusing on, and we can all do this, is supporting women or minority led businesses by, you know, from Shannon's last talk, you know, shifting your M&M. So as a business owner, when you're purchasing gifts, for your team or for your prospects or clients or whatever, you know, choose to support a woman-owned business. Choose to support an impact business. And then you look at how that relates on much higher levels. So even people in Bend are managing very large budgets for very big companies. So they have more power than they might realize. It's not only about your own pocketbook, it's about your sphere of influence as well. And how can you be intentional with those actions and vocal about I'm doing this because I want to support this XYZ and pick your poison, environment, women, you know, education, arts, whatever it is.
So need to be having the tough conversations, which is, I would agree. I mean, I was debating asking you in my head, like when I went to like, oh, let me go down to like, this is for me. Like, oh, I don't know if you should do it, but I'm really glad I did. I didn't expect that outcome to happen where I ended up learning a lot about myself and what I need to be doing when it comes to talking to women, which was, thank you.
You're welcome.
And good for you.
Anytime.
Open to that.
And be vulnerable, right?
Yeah. You're serving as a great example for men everywhere to say, oh, like, look, he just did that and like, he didn't die. We didn't know laser beams came out of our eyes.
It was not a contentious exchange. It was actually cool all around.
No. And it was something that I wasn't even aware of. So awareness is a huge thing. Yeah. Like what you've been saying, both you guys have been saying over and over again of just being this whole idea, this notion of just being raised that way so that you are unconditionally aware, you're unconscious to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's kind of funny. I find that within myself more and more often. I'm trying to work on just like looking at myself as more of like in third party, which sounds crazy, but just like, how is Bud reacting to this conversation? Right. Oh, look at Bud's getting upset in traffic. That's silly. Why would you do that? Like, it makes you like, yeah.
Some detachment.
You're taking your ego out of it, though, in the same way that, you know, when we're talking about what Shannon did earlier in the conversation, you're not taking things personally. And that's a really great growth mindset and mentality. And I think that's how we can change habits, which then change routines. And that's what needs to happen so that it doesn't feel like heavy lifting anymore. In the same way that when you drive to work, you know how to do that. You don't have to think about, I got to turn here and I got to, you don't have to think about, oh, I got to slow down and, you know, hit my blinker 100, you know.
No, it's just awareness. You just go. Yeah, exactly. So, that's a great analogy to it. You just understand and it's become versus becoming awake to what you're doing is not good for what we're trying to do, which is like, well, from what you're saying, if we have a 25% growth by having women in more leadership roles, but there's only like less than 20% of women in leadership roles, then the whole economy, we can all prosper from that. Sounds kind of smart. So that's a big lesson on the what I can do and what men can do. What can women do?
I love it. Women can ask for what they're worth. Women can stop working for free. Women can support other women. Women can not have pointy elbows.
Not as we talk about. Can we go back to the worth one really quick? Can you dive into that one?
Yeah. And that's actually one of the things that Melinda Gates talks about in her book, too, is that I'm underpaid. So women are women want to help. Right. Mm-hmm. And we get this a lot with Sudara, where people are like, oh, my God, this is an amazing mission. We want to be a part of it. What can we do? We just want to help. And, you know, with part of what we're realizing now and what we're doing and being very intentional about leading by example, while in the short term and full disclosure, we do have, you know, some of our leadership team is not that we're not getting paid what we're worth right now as we're getting to this growth. But we have a goal and we will. And we will be even publishing that, because if we continue to pay women less than they're worth or less than men, and we still have about the 20% gap, which is going to take 208 years to close if we don't do anything differently, we become part of the problem, right? And so women, in trying to help and trying to say like, oh, I want to help, I want to be a part of this, and you don't even have to pay me, we have to stop doing that. We have to stop doing that. And listen, if you don't need the money, cool. Take it and invest it in another woman who does. Invest it in a woman-owned business, help a single mom, buy some clothes, do something anonymous. There's lots of women that could use that money.
Is there a resource that they can go to?
And make sure when you're giving raises, make sure when you're giving raises, you're giving women, you know, proportionate raises and
things. I could confidently say that's happening. But what I can say is not happening as often as I am approached by men in my short time of being an entrepreneur for asking for more, more often than from women. I actually had
it's part of the culture,
because they have sponsors and mentors that teach them how to
tell them to do that.
So, but what I was about to get to is, where can a woman go to look up, like, this is how I can be taught on how to do this, how to ask tactfully? Because I think they are afraid, or I think
there are a dearth of resources. And I think, you know, a great way to lead by example, bud, would be for you, in partnership with OK or whatever, to say, hey, I'm leading a workshop at Monzama that empowers women how to ask for their raises, what they need to do. We're going to role play if it's awkward and she's never done that, you know, whatever. That would be a great way that men could realize this is happening and then sponsor. Versus like, oh, poor thing, she didn't know how to ask and therefore she got less. Like, again, that doesn't change culturally the shift of what needs to happen.
I agree. I actually, there's a great book called, there's a few of them. Start With No has a great one when it comes to how to negotiate raises. There is a few others that I'll put in the show notes. It's not coming to me right now, but I was actually at coffee within this last week with a team member. And what I like to do is I take all of our team members out to lunch or coffee to just ask them like, hey, what do you want from this job? How's it going? And I like to do it like every 6 months, and we go in a deep dive of what they really want. And that can mean a lot of things. Like some people's mind can go, oh, they're just gonna ask somebody. They actually don't. Not all of them go like right to my, a lot of them just like, well, I want to be able to learn more. I want this and that. And I'm like, okay, here's an educational opportunity we can do. I want to be a leader. I want to manage. Like, okay, great. And what's going right? What's going wrong? And it's a really great way for me to understand what's happening within. And I do it with everyone. But the recent one I did was with a woman, and she, and I was asking, you know, what do you want? And she was telling me all this stuff, and she really loves it here, and we have a great culture, and I know that. And I kept asking, like, what else do you want? She's like, to learn more. I was like, okay, what else do you want? And and she didn't ask. And then we kept on talking and we went to the pros. I was like, all right, that there was some of your opportunity. I tried it three times. Then we went from the pros and then of what's going on. And we went to the cons and she goes, compensation. I was like, there we go.
There it is.
All right. Yeah. Let's talk about
that. Talk about it. Mm-hmm. Right.
And she got to let out, but there was this, it's like this big weight was left off her and we left with, she got a raise.
Yeah.
Because awesome. She was worth it. And I was going to end up giving it to her anyway on her review, which was in like a month, but she got a month earlier because she eventually got to it.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think the more that we can talk
and
about it.
And you're probably like, bud, you asked me, should give it to her a month.
No, you know what? It's not the point to always be one step ahead. I mean, mm-hmm. that can take away her power, right? So it is a growth opportunity for women to learn to ask for what they're worth or what they deserve or what their male counterparts are getting. I mean, there.
I was also leading her, by the way, because she's so worth it.
Right.
I was just like, come on.
So you're like, we're doing this.
Yeah.
Let's figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the more, I mean, honestly, even this podcast is going to be super helpful because it does, first of all, it's not something that we're talking about in, you know, dark corners or in the shadows or not talking about at all anymore. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. Let's talk about it. Let's figure out how we can do it. Here are some ways that have worked for some people. There's a ton of information. As Shannon said, if you Google how to ask for a raise as a woman, like there's that. And that's the good news about what's mm-hmm. happening now and post Me Too and all of that is that really, I mean, like, you know, the resources, all these things that are, and there's, you know, you should see my bookshelf at home. So people are talking about it right now. There's more content out there than, I mean, you know, there's more content out there than you can imagine mm-hmm. on really how to do this. I think what's more important is making the concepts that you can do this, you should do this. And here's mm-hmm. why. It's not selfish. It's actually helping women everywhere mm-hmm. for every woman to stand up and ask for more. And then when it gets to time to be prescriptive in that, then that's, you know, that's a Google search, right?
Right. No, yeah, exactly. And you're right. If you do Google searches, it's actually going to come down to which piece of advice do you take because right. there's going to be so much. So really just Google it. Never Split the Difference was the big one I was thinking of. Absolutely fascinating negotiation book from the lead negotiator at Chris Boss, I think his name was Chris Boss, but the guy basically was a lead negotiator at the FBI, and he each chapter is a super fun read because it starts with a hostage negotiation mm-hmm. and he actually led somewhere in like across the world, and then he's like, all right, this is what happened and this is how we apply it to business, and then he takes it all the way to like asking for raises and stuff like that,
which can be a hostile negotiation apparently
it's yeah
in some environments,
but it makes it a fun read because it's not like, okay, here we go in a business right. book, which I've done a lot of. This one, like, oh, look at this fun story that right. actually happened right. Okay, so we've covered a lot of topics. Is there anything else you guys want to jump in and mention? I'm super excited about what this is going to do for the men and women yeah. that listen to it.
I don't think anything new, but just reiterating to the men or anyone listening, it really just collaboration is what we're talking about. We're mm-hmm. never talking about attacking or excluding men. It's just like we can do so much better together. Mm-hmm. So if we can figure out ways to make that happen, not just in theory or in rhetoric, but in practicality within the business environment, within our communities, within government, within school system, you know, all of it, we all win. And that's the point, you know, making the world a better place for future generations, for our children. We want to learn from past mistakes and we want to get better. And we actually have the opportunity to do that. We want to get it right.
Yeah. A rising tide truly does lift all boats.
It does.
Right. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about, you know, I've been in an interesting place a couple times as an entrepreneur. One, you know, I started out a young entrepreneur and then like Zuckerberg and that whole crew came out and all of a sudden, like at 27, I'm old. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That happened. I know being a woman in business and now, you know, being a woman of color in business, we, you know, needs more. We need our most marginalized communities.
It means more.
Okay. It means more. So you can sometimes feel like, and so sometimes I can relate to when you're saying like, I'm a white guy, like, and I'm not a jerk and I'm not whatever. It's like, I'm a white woman and I'm still a woman in business, yeah. but like, I'm not a minority enough now. Like, yeah. you know, what is that all about? And really kind of putting your ego aside and taking the me out of it and understanding that mm-hmm. by helping our most marginalized communities, that as the tide rises, it's going to help me too. It'll hit mm-hmm. my level and lift me up as well. And I know, and you know, operating from a place where you know that and you understand that and where you are willing to put yourself aside to help the greater good, that's when the title change is going to happen.
If you end up having it so that women are in more leadership roles, so it lifts the entire economy by 25%, then
that's helpful.
It's really helpful. And underrepresented groups. I appreciate Lisa always talking to that point too, because, you know, it is about women, but it's also about women of color specifically, or other marginalized underrepresented groups, right? Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. LGBTQ. I mean, we're talking it, and we can all, again, you know, if we apply that mentality across the board, everybody's helped. Societies are helped. The world gets to be a much better place.
Great.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, it's been super fun.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, cheers.
Yeah. Let's go buy some hot sauce.
Yeah. I know, right? Christmas.
Right.